What's the difference between DIY and doing it yourself? It's the difference between a part-time passion and a full-time business. Wix gives you the power to turn your passion into a moneymaker with a website that fits your unique vision and the business tools you need to succeed. Let your ideas flow with AI that guides you but keeps you in the driver's seat. Manage your business from one dashboard and keep it growing with built-in marketing features. It's time to turn your daydream into your dream job. Do it yourself. Go to Wix.com.
Welcome to StartupRad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRad.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany. If you are listening to this as an audio podcast, this was originally published as a YouTube interview conducted remotely. You can find it on youtube.com/StartupRadio, and you can also listen to all of our blockchain content on Blockchain Germany by Startup Radio. You can find the podcast on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and any other channel. As I was researching this this interview, I fell into a little trap, and so I first have a disclaimer. As opposed to the usual YouTuber or podcaster in the blockchain space, you, meaning the startup I am interviewing, don't pay thousands of euros to be there, and neither am I invested in you guys, nor do I get any kickback. For everyone who's surprised about that, many channels work like this. Just pay attention to the people in Telegram chats who ask admins for emails and business proposals. They usually send an offer with a price tag of several thousand euros, sometimes upwards of 50,000 euros, just to be on their channel. Oh, and before I forget, they usually only want cash. They don't take crypto. Make sure you vet your blockchain information source before you fall in those traps. That said, I do have a Freddy here with me who's not really a Freddy. Can you introduce yourself?
Yes, absolutely. Hi, my name is Freddy, but originally Friedrich from Germany. But for all English speakers, I guess Freddy is a lot easier, which I learned when I was an exchange student in high school in the US. So that's where my nickname Freddy comes from, and I've been Freddy ever since. And I basically been a project manager all my life. I worked for like 10 years or more as a director of project management at one of Germany's largest internet agencies. So I was focused on like enterprise websites, e-commerce shops, mobile apps, all that kind of stuff. And later then, not only like leading projects or portfolio of projects myself, but also educating project managers that came on board the company and doing some organizational development. And I got introduced to blockchain in 2015 by my friend and co-founder, Peter, who told me about Ethereum. And I fell down the rabbit hole, as we say, in the blockchain space pretty soon. And it consumed a lot of my free time, evenings, et cetera, weekends. And then in 2018, I decided to go full-time blockchain. Basically, and this is also where our company started, but we're going to cover that later, I guess.
Okay, first I have a smartass remarks. I know people don't like smartasses. I do believe going down that rabbit hole is from the novel Alice in Wonderland, because she falls into that rabbit hole to experience the whole story. Secondly, which high school did you attend in the US?
Oh, it was a very, very small one. La Center High School in Washington State. So in the Pacific Northwest, beautiful area there. But the village I was living there was like 500 people. And so it was a really small school. It was a bit scary when I first learned about it. You know, I got the information about the profile and stuff, but it turned out to be a very, like a great year that formed and shaped me in many, many ways. So I'm still benefiting, and learning English is like the most obvious, but certainly not the most important aspect of being abroad and as an exchange student.
Yes, also one thing I've learned when I've been abroad, you never get told the whole truth. But enough about that. I've seen you've been more than 4 years a project manager as well as a lecturer at the University of Applied Sciences here in Rhein-Main. Anything you learned here, like structuring your stuff, that you can now use in your day-to-day life?
Not so much in that regard, because basically I've been, like I said, a project manager before being a lecturer already like 10 years. So like, it was more the teaching experience that is, you know, good to have, and realization of that you cannot be everybody's friend when you're upfront as a teacher, basically. And you have to make it as interactive as possible, I guess, to bring the message across. And I think that's the most valuable lesson I learned. And that's what I always strive in when I give lectures or speaking at conferences or something, that I try to engage the audience so that they're not passively consumed, but actively, you know, follow and think, and maybe even provide comments or questions.
Yes, actively participating. For everybody, nobody could see that, but I'm doing this interactive. I was dancing when you've been talking. Talking about going down that rabbit hole in blockchain space, how was your introduction and how did you end up with AnyBlock Analytics?
Right. So the introduction was pretty much, it was before Ethereum even launched. So it was Peter knew some people that were involved early in the Ethereum community, and basically he pitched it to me as a like as an alternative to fiat money, so that it could transform the way our financial system and even our nation states might operate, because it actually was the first time I thought about what makes a nation state such a powerful entity. And basically it's because they're printing the money and they accept fiat money or their local currency as the only way to pay their taxes. And with that, they have money, they can provide security and these kind of things and protect the borders. And obviously there's the cultural heritage kind of thing as well. But so that's how I started as a sort of a money, which I guess was back in the days, 2015, also the story about Bitcoin. But I found it much more interesting than Bitcoin, because you have the smart contract capabilities. So you can have any arbitrary software code running on the blockchain. And to me, that sounded really, really powerful, even though at first, obviously, I was overwhelmed and did not quite grasp, you know, the potential for it. But like I said, the more and more I learned, and as Ethereum launched and progressed, it became more clear that this is a very powerful world computer, and that I still believe that today, that like in 10 years, it's going to be as ubiquitous as the internet is today. So meaning you might not notice blockchain specifically, particularly not the bad UI that we're having currently. But it's just going to be the foundation of everything, just like the internet. You don't realize, you know, the internet, or you don't know if your file is safe, you know, locally or in a cloud or something like that. It's just going to be blockchain, and you don't know about it probably only if it fails or if it's missing, then you notice. Like if you don't have Wi-Fi somewhere, and in Germany that happens too often, but. You know, these, so that's basically my belief, that this is really, really, really going to be a fundamental infrastructure piece of everything, really, the economy, but also social structures and things like that.
What came to mind when you've been talking about Ethereum? You are headquartered in the beautiful city of Mainz, where I was born. That's a big plus. And also there's one of the lead developers of Ethereum there, right?
Say that again. Your connection was lost.
Ooh, I'm sorry. Mainz is also the home of one of the lead developers of Ethereum, right?
Yes, that's correct. Brainbow Technologies, the developers of Raiden and Trustlines, They're based in Mainz, and this is also where basically the connection comes from, and also where the story of AnyBlock Analytics starts, because the service of AnyBlock Analytics basically was first started in-house with the Raiden team. They're working on a scaling solution for Ethereum network, and they basically developed this first idea, this first product, and then it was decided that this technology could actually be very interesting for other companies, both crypto and enterprises as well. And that's when we decided to spin it out of BrainBot and have it as an own entity.
Totally makes sense. Lots of people are now thinking about, and what are you guys actually analyzing? What are you guys doing? What is your market? What does AnyBlock Analytics provide?
Yes, I guess the easiest way to explain it is if people are familiar with Google Analytics, that's like a little plugin or a pixel in like almost every website or online shop that tracks how the user behaves. And that's basically what we do for the blockchain space. So we collect all the data that is in the blockchain, and it can be used to, for example, improve your product, because you can see how your smart contract, your code that lives on the blockchain, is being used. What are the functions that are used the most? What are not used at all? What's the traffic? What's your traction for startup key performance indicators? These kind of things. And we provide that data and make it easily accessible. For example, you can build on our technology stack, you can build easy visualizations so that you actually have a nice chart that displays whatever the growth of your product or your service that you have on the blockchain in a time series, which is something that you cannot generally achieve from raw blockchain data, because raw blockchain data is basically, it's not just zeros and ones, but this hexadecimal encoded. So you can't make any sense out of it without decoding and enriching the data first, which is basically what happens in our technology stack.
So going back quite a bit, because we want to make this interview accessible to not only the blockchain cracks, but also people who don't know a lot about blockchain. First and foremost, we may want to say that there's not one blockchain, there are many blockchains, and basically you guys can like poke with the foot if this blockchain is dead or alive, right?
Yeah, you could say that. We certainly see a lot more truth than like you referred to in the beginning about the disclaimer in the blockchain space. It's a very, you know, new technology, a new area, and there's a lot of questionable marketing techniques and also money raising that is, you know, based on dubious facts or just marketing white papers and things like that. So we can see the actual truth that is on the chain. So that's basically, you could argue, the only truth there is in the blockchain space. So we can see that. We already have indexed 17 blockchains, and we're going to add a lot more. So yes, we can have also like cross-blockchain, you know, comparisons and metrics on how successful they are on the blockchain level, but also on any individual level. For example, the Ethereum blockchain, we can differentiate between different projects or different tokens. For example, we're doing projects with the Frankfurt School Blockchain Center and numerous others, academic organizations that use us as a data pool for, you know, when they're comparing, say, different tokens or different projects.
So you have indexed 17 blockchains. So going a little bit back, that basically means you first have to go through a blockchain, indexing it so you can actually search it, and then you can use it at any block, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So we set up a server in blockchain speak that's called a node that participates in this network. And what makes it a little bit more complicated is it cannot be a normal full node, but it has to be an archive node, which means that we record everything from the beginning of the blockchain. Like when the blockchain starts with a genesis block, when the network comes to life, basically, like in Ethereum, it was 2015. And so we collect all the data through that server, through that node, and like I said, decode it, enrich it, and then put it in our infrastructure, which basically is a very, very huge database or several databases to make it accessible. And also because the blockchain technology is so new, a lot of enterprises have trouble accessing this kind of technology or working with it, running their own node, so we can run a node for them, or they can just access the data directly with like standard technology means that they're using already with their enterprise resource planning, business intelligence, or any other legacy IT system. So it makes the entrance into the blockchain world a lot easier, I would say.
Where to start, where to stop? I'm not a coder, and I've understood that you guys are offering analytics that all your kind of tying into the respective blockchain and get all the data, put it in a database, and then it's searchable on a more user-oriented level. How would that actually work? How would a company, how would a coder integrate you? And is there a place as a usual retail user you could use your tool?
Well, we're focusing more on the B2B sector, so we're not so much a consumer-facing project, even though some of our products could be used or could be accessed. Like, for example, we have a block explorer for the blockchains that we offer. So there you can see the latest transactions, the latest blocks from a blockchain. That would be something that is available for consumers as well. But there's others that are more geared toward consumers than that. Our technology is more for business-to-business scenarios. And like you said, there's two types of users. There's the technical users or developers, and they can access our data via an application programming interface or API, which is the standard form of interfacing with data. And so they code some query, like, for example, okay, show me a transaction to this contract, you know, that when it happens, and then they can listen to when somebody is sending funds to that smart contract, which may be whatever, say an insurance contract, and once the premium is received, then the contract covers some certain type of risk, or for example, that would be an example. And so those would be the technical users. But we're also facilitating or making the blockchain data more accessible for, let's say, marketing people or more like management type staff. And for that, either we or somebody in their team can build dashboards and make these nice charts that I was referring to earlier. So you can see, let's say, the distribution of a token. This is important when you talk about governance rights, that is depending on the amount of tokens that you hold, for example. Or if you want to see like the growth of usage of certain, let's say, decentralized finance applications, things like that, or you want to know how much crypto tokens, Ethereum or whatnot, is, you know, basically put into several smart contracts that are locked up, which is important for, let's say, traders that want to trade on cryptocurrencies. They could use these kind of charts to gain insights into blockchain data.
Now I got a little bit better understanding. We've always been referring to smart contracts. Basically, what I understand is that you write a code that is approximately like a contract, and actually everything you have in the contract, every clause is like backed with code, and basically it's a program acting as a contract. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Some people don't like the term because the contract's not really smart in that sense. But like you said, for example, IBM calls it chain code to make clear that it's just like software code but it lives on chain, on the blockchain, or on a blockchain. There's obviously several, like you said. So this chain code or smart contracts, or they have different names and different blockchains. But like you said, it's immutable. So whatever is coded there, it's guaranteed to happen. So there's no legal, you know, argument of, oh, this was not meant to be, and you understood this wrong, and you have to go to court and wait for 3 years to litigate it or something. But it's really like input output. If it says you put this in and then this output happens, then that's what it's going to do, and there's nothing that can stop it. Nobody can censor it. Those are like the characteristics of a blockchain. Nobody can censor it. Nobody can stop it. And yeah, that's it.
I see the usefulness, especially from my background in the derivatives contracts. But on the other hand, I always would like to have like a lever where, for example, a court ruling, when it changed the contract, could also change that, as well as I'm always, especially when you start with something with a smart contract, and if it's not like a very simple called plain vanilla derivatives, I would always like to have a backup, because you can always make mistakes, right? Even the lawyers make mistakes in the contracts, and they lead to trouble.
Yes, absolutely. But that's not really a problem if you write it correctly. Then there's upgradability mechanisms where you can, just like any other software or the apps on your iPhone or something, that it can be updated. Now for the crypto purists or ideological decentralized people, they say, well, if there's somebody that can update a contract, that entity controls the contract and has the power to change it without somebody knowing. And that's true. That's a danger. It's a risk. But still, I would say, particularly in enterprise segments, B2B, there needs to be some way of correcting mistakes, or if there's a bug found, then you need to be able to fix it, obviously. So I think this is a good way. You can compromise and you can have some sort of governance mechanism that, you know, so that not only one person can upgrade a contract, but this has to be a decision by some sort of a company committee or a consortia that is spanning multiple companies to change like key contracts. So there's different models for that, and it's definitely possible.
Now we are much smarter. I actually learned two new words during this interview. It's the Genesis block and the upgradability. I love that. Going a little bit back to what you guys are doing, what blockchains are you right now working with? And how would someone be able to like get to know you more, approach you, or work with your API?
Right. So we started with the Ethereum blockchain ecosystem, I would say, because there's not only one Ethereum mainnet, that's the main Ethereum blockchain, but there's also test networks, there's derivatives, like you said, sort of that are based from Ethereum technology, but have a different focus. For example, the Energy Web Chain is created by the Energy Web Foundation and a lot of energy sector affiliates, large and small, and they have their own blockchain that specializes in energy use cases. There's also POA chains and others. They're all derivatives basically of the Ethereum technology, and all publicly available chains in that segment we have already indexed. Next on our list is probably going to be the Cosmos technology, and there's also several blockchains that are based on the Cosmos technology. The most prominent one would be the Binance chain, where the famous Binance exchange runs their transactions. And we're also going to add Bitcoin and the more, let's say, traditional blockchains that don't have maybe smart contract capabilities, but they're nonetheless important for the trading activity that's happening there. And people can get in touch with us just by visiting our blockchain, our website, sorry, anyblockanalytics.com, or just write us an email on contact@anyblockanalytics.com. We're also on Twitter, on Medium, LinkedIn, all usual channels, basically.
Haha, and everybody who's listening to this audio podcast or watching this YouTube video, go down here in the show notes. There will be a link to our website, www.startuprate.io/da-la-la-la-la. Quite a lot of text, and that's actually the show notes of our interview. There will be transcript as well as all the links you need, as also getting the LinkedIn profile of Freddy. That said, just a few more questions on Anyblock. How many guys are there? When did you guys get founded officially? And how you guys are financed?
Right. So we got started in 2018, summer 2018. And we're three founders. We're a team of four, like a core team. Then we have additional help by freelancers, designers, etc. But the core team is us four. We know each other since, over a decade ago. So we're close friends, and we believe that this is part of the success of our team and of will be of our company. And we just closed our seed round. We raised €500,000 from ESB Bank in Mainz, the Accelerator Frankfurt in Frankfurt, which helps us a lot, and also three other business angels. So we got quite a good mix of experience, network, and fundamental banking expertise, basically. And so we're looking very much forward to leveraging those connections as well as the new funding to accelerate our growth in Germany and beyond.
What are the markets you're looking for next, as you say, Germany and beyond?
Right. Well, it's basically really Europe, or the European Union, obviously, is the easiest to grasp. But we also have some advisors in the US, and Peter is going to travel to New York just in like two weeks, I think, to reach out to several prospects there. So this is the most interesting markets to us. In Asia, a lot of things are happening as well in crypto. It's just that if you don't have people on the ground there, then it's harder to get a foot in the door, as you say. So that's why we're primarily looking in our German European home market. And the most interesting clients for us would be, because we're working a lot with crypto teams right now, because they're obviously the most advanced on the technology and have therefore the greatest need for our service. But as more and more enterprises come online with blockchain projects and proof of concepts, we'd love to work with one of the, or a few, obviously, larger corporates, let's say DAX, MDAX entities that are working on blockchain, and we can facilitate our technology also for their private permission blockchains if they need to.
Yes, great. We may add ISB is Investitions- und Strukturbank Mainz, which is like the public infrastructure bank of the state of Rhineland-Palatine, Rheinland-Pfalz, where Mainz is the capital. Well, thank you very much. It was a great pleasure having you here. Everybody who'd like to learn more, go down here in the show notes. There will be all the links. Great. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure having you.
Thanks for having me.
See you again. Bye-bye.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.
You know where your business would be without you. Imagine where it could go with more of you. Well, With Wix, you can create a website with more of your vision, your voice, your expertise. Wix gives you the freedom to truly own your brand and do it on your own, with full customization and advanced AI tools that help turn your ideas into reality. Scale up without being held back by cookie-cutter solutions and grow your business into your online brand. Because without you, your business is just business as usual. Take control. Go to Wix.com.